Okay, there's our story. I think it's about 25, 26 years ago I read this story. Monty is a patient in hospital. He's causing a bit of consternation on the ward, driving the staff to distraction because he's refusing to take any medication. And eventually the consultant is called and sits down with Monty and calmly says, what's the problem then? And Monty says, I don't need any treatment, I'm dead. And the consultant says, no, you're not dead. And Monty says, yes, I am. And dead people don't need any medical treatment. So the consultant goes away, and then he has a flash of inspiration, comes back to Monty and says, will you confirm to me some things then? Will you confirm to me that you are dead? Yes, he says, I can confirm I am dead. Will you confirm also that dead men don't bleed? Yes, I can confirm that dead men don't bleed. So quick as a flash, the consultant with a scalpel just nicks Monty on the thumb and out, pours the blood. And then Monty shouts, oh, I was so, Doc, he says, I was so wrong. Dead people do bleed after all. And the point of the story is that the folks convinced against their will are of the same opinion still. Doesn't matter about the evidence for Monty. He'd already made his mind up. He was dead, and therefore didn't matter what anybody, any evidence anybody could provide, didn't make any difference. He's already decided. And there are many people, it doesn't matter about the facts. Who cares about the truth? Who cares about the evidence? They're not influenced at all. They've made their minds up. I remember when I was a young teenager in my friend's house, and my friend had been starting to explain to his mother about some science he'd learnt in school, about gravity. And out of the blue, I always remember it now, his mother said, well, you know the people in Australia, love, they're upside down, aren't they? Why don't they fall off? Well, said my friend, he knew the answer. So he tried to explain about Newton and apples and trees and planets being attracted by moons and moons being attracted by planets and so on. And after he'd finished, he said, no, love, no, I've got it now. We're on the top, aren't we? But they're on the inside of the rim. So she thought like the earth was like a bicycle wheel. We were standing on the top of the tyres. The people in Australia were standing on the rim with their heads pointing inside. And he tried to reason with her. And I remember after he tried to reason, she said, well, I don't care what you're saying. That's what I think. And so the facts were irrelevant. Now, pure science, if you can get pure science, scientists are sinners. So they sometimes cheat with the evidence. But pure science looks at what's going on, observes, catalogues facts, and looks for a reason, an explanation. Scientists are meant to study the evidence, the data, and suggest theories and so on. Galileo, many years ago, the accepted theory, particularly of the Roman Church at the time, was the Earth. We were at the center. The Earth was at the center and everything else was in orbit. And Galileo looked, and he said, well, it doesn't fit the facts. And he looked through a telescope, and he saw the moons of Jupiter, and he said, I wonder, as the moons go around Jupiter, are we going around the sun? That's all he suggested. And this clashed with the Roman Church, and so the Pope sent a delegation of cardinals. They went to Galileo, and they told him to shut up. And he said, well, there's my telescope. Look. And they said, we will not look. And he said, but if you look, he said, if you look, you'll find the truth. And their response was, and where will that lead us? Now, what a ridiculous thing to say. But we're all the same by nature. We're all the same. Sometimes we confront you with the overwhelming evidence. Some of us particularly. For years, overwhelming evidence. There's a God. We're not interested in the evidence. We're not taking any notice of the facts. Even sometimes when the evidence is so accurate. Here's Rich Rupert, as I called him for the last 4 or 5 weeks in my story. He's in torment. He's in Hades. He is begging for the first time in his life, will you send somebody back to my brothers to tell him? I got 5 brothers. I don't want them to end up in this torment. Go back. Somebody, if somebody is raised from the dead, send Lazarus, look, back from the grave. Thou will convince them. That'll clinch it. All bets will be off then. But would it clinch it? And I was a very young Christian. I went to a Pentecostal service up in Maesteg in the Apostolic Church, and there was an old preacher there, and he's preaching on John chapter 11, which is where another man, no relation, another man called Lazarus has died. It was a friend of Jesus. Mary and Martha were also friends of Jesus. They're the sisters, and they are weeping. Their brother's died. And Jesus arrives too late, it seems, too late to do anything. Nobody can do anything now. Psalm 89, who can live and not see death? Who can save himself from the power of the grave? We've seen it this last 12 months, and we, David Bowie, Terry Wogan, Alan Rickman, you know, Paul Daniels, all these famous people, Carolyn Ahern, you know, they couldn't save themselves from death, could they? And here's this old preacher, and he paints the scene at the tomb of Lazarus. Hebrews 2 says, the devil keeps us as slaves because of the fear of death. He holds the power of death. And here's this awful scene. This old preacher painted such a vivid picture. There's the tomb. There's Mary and Martha weeping. They're so disappointed that Jesus didn't come earlier. Jesus sees the awfulness of the grief. He weeps himself. And then Jesus raises his voice and he calls the dead man by name. Lazarus, come out. The old preacher said, he had to make sure he said Lazarus, otherwise everybody would have come out of the graves. And he called, Lazarus, come out, and suddenly, out he steps. He's risen from the dead. He's back from the grave. And you'll recall later in the New Testament, after Jesus is raised, the Bible explains why Jesus is raised. It was impossible for death to hold him. There was nothing on Jesus. No sin, see, no blemish. There was nothing that death could get its grip on. Satan had nothing. He tried and tried and tried, but he couldn't hold Jesus. But then the preacher painted the scene. He says, as Lazarus comes out, he said, can you imagine all the demons? They rush around their leader, Satan, and they say to him, hang on, I thought you had the keys of death and hell. Can you thank God this morning? Jesus has got all the keys. He's got all the keys. Same chapter, Jesus says, I'm the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, even if they die, they live. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Jesus even preaches there at that grave. But here's my point. In John chapter 11, one is raised, Jesus, by the power of Jesus Christ. Lazarus is raised. The evidence is overwhelming. The leaders, the chief priests, and the Pharisees, what do? They immediately meet in the Sanhedrin. What for? To ignore the evidence and plot the death of Jesus Christ. The evidence is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. We don't need evidence. And here, that's why I'm sure Jesus includes this parable here in Luke 16, that we might realize that there's no point in Rich Rupert saying, look, send Lazarus back from the dead. If my brother sees somebody raised from the dead, that'll clinch it, because it won't clinch it. Because the evidence is irrelevant. People are not interested in evidence. I can still remember when John F. Kennedy was shot. I was in the first year of comprehensive school. And I remember his funeral because they recited some verses. They were in the Bible, obviously. I didn't know that at the time. But they were in a song by the Byrds. Remember the Byrds, anybody? B-Y-R-D-S. It was from Ecclesiastes 3. It's a time to live, a time to die, and so on. But there's a very powerful verse just after that. God has set eternity into the hearts of men. In other words, we know deep down there's a God. We know deep down after we breathe our last, there's everlasting. There's an eternity. I saw a company driving past, a roofing company last week, everlasting. I said, yeah, and deep down, we know this is not it. We know it. But we choose to close our minds to the evidence, to close our minds to the truth. I heard Ricky Gervais on the radio last week. Last time I heard him, a couple of years ago, he was talking about being reported in the newspaper, and he said, look, I know I've done some things wrong, I know I've made mistakes, I don't need journalists pointing it out in the newspaper. And the radio presenter said, well, can you give us an example of when you've made a mistake, Ricky? Ricky couldn't think of one. Not prepared to own up to one mistake, one thing that he'd done wrong. Are you any better? Are you? Have you confessed your sin? John chapter 2, I read just last week, where Jesus says, he didn't need man's testimony about man, for he knew what was in a man. It's rattling a bit there. What he really needs is somebody to go around and press the heating so it goes off. Do you know how to do it, Jeff? Thank you. Those training sessions have paid off, haven't they? Thank you. See, when I was a young Christian, I read a book, The Happiest Men on Earth, The Happiest People on Earth. The book was hopeless, but the title was brilliant because it was about, to be a Christian, you should be the happiest people on earth because your biggest problem is sorted. It's gone. He'll never dredge your sins up. I got so many from the past. I got so many from last week even. And if I confess them, he's promised they've gone. You'll never find out what they are. I'm so glad he won't. He'll never confront me with them again. And therefore, as C.S. Lewis rightly said, this gospel of Jesus Christ is either the best news possible, or it's of no consequence at all. Either it's true or it's not. And if it's true, it's the best. If it's not true, it's worthless. My concern is that every one of you is here now, and I wonder how many of you, for some of you, it's not the best. Well, it's not rubbish either. It's somewhere in between. It can't be. That can't be so. You haven't understood it. It's either the best possible news or it's of no value. It can't be all right. Every fortnight I put in my big black wheelie bin out. It's full of rubbish. I'm very glad to get rid of all the stuff that's in it. It is trash. And the gospel of Jesus Christ is either trash or it's true. And if it's true, it's not trash. This is treasure. Now, what is it to you? I was in the co-op the other day, in a queue, and the woman behind me, frightened the living daylights of me, a woman about my age, she suddenly shouted out, put somebody else on the till. She frightened me, eh? Well, they did. They put somebody else on the till, and as soon as they did, she rushed forward, jumped the queue, rushed forward. She wanted to put the money on the lottery. I thought, I'm in a queue buying my milk and my Weetabix. No, all she wants is the lottery. I guess she figured if she won 50,000 or a million or whatever it is, that her life would be improved. She was hoping for treasure, I suppose, in the lottery. Where's your treasure? I remember some years ago, Paul McCartney's wife, Linda, the headline in the newspaper, she had cancer. We're going to fight this. Maybe 7 weeks, eight weeks later, headline, Linda loses her fight. She can't fight death. You can't fight death. What if Jesus really did take on death, your biggest enemy and mine? What if Jesus took on death and beat it? He says he's dead. He claimed he's done that. He's claimed to be risen from the dead. Some of you know he's risen, but some of you don't. But what if Jesus can conquer death for you? You know, the night I was converted in Malvern all those years ago now, 28 years ago, I saw what I was, all the arrogance, all the sin, it was horrible. I saw my attitudes and acts over the years, they were disgusting. And I saw I needed to be saved. And I called out, and I was thrilled to be forgiven. But I had no idea that Jesus was offering me much more than that. Much more. That was wonderful. But he was offering me much, much more than I could have ever imagined. Because he's risen. He's alive now. He's risen from the dead. Is he yours this morning? I read just yesterday in John chapter 5, Jesus asks the guy at the pool in Bethsaida, a most obvious question, but it's an important question. Do you want to be well? Do you want to be well? You know, it's a simple question. Do you want to stay as you are, or do you want to be well? You ask Veronica in the hospital, or John this morning, or Val, do you want to be well? They want to be well, physically. But Jesus is asking spiritually, do you want to be well? Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. Look to him. Amen. Let's sing three verses again.